Today's program is brought to you by Copper and Kings, pure copper pot-distilled American brandy, aged in Kentucky bourbon barrels. For more information, visit copperandkings.com.
Hi, this is Celia Kutcher, host of Animal Instinct, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good morning. You're listening to In the Drink on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Joe Campanelli, and it is an absolutely beautiful day here in Bushwick, Brooklyn. We're coming to you from Roberta's Restaurant, as usual. We are coming to you live from the shipping containers in the back. Quite a far cry from where our guest today hails from. He comes from a beautiful Italian Riviera of Liguria. Before we get going with him, I just want to let you know, if you like In the Drink, you are always able to listen to it live 10 a.m. every morning, every Wednesday morning on heritageradionetwork.org, or you can subscribe in iTunes and or on the podcast app, where you'll get it automatically uploaded to your device every single week. Also, when I'm not hosting In the Drink, please come say hello to me at one of our restaurants, Dell'Anima, Lartuzzi, Lepicio, or our wine bar, Anfora, where I serve as beverage director. All right. Our guest today, as I said, comes from Liguria, which means that he is in between the Italian coast, the French Riviera. He can drive to go skiing. He can go into Piedmont for some lunch if he wants, go to Barolo for lunch and head back. He's from one of the most beautiful places of Italy, from Liguria. We have Ivan Giuliani from Terenzuola Vineyard in Liguria. Welcome to In the Drink. It's exciting to have you here.
Really, thanks to you and to ask me to come with you.
Also in the studio, I don't know if she's going to say anything, but she's a little shy. Jen Lucia, who's a friend for many years. She was part of the opening team over at Lartuzzi and now works with Skernik Wines. Jen is the best, and we love working with Skernik. You have a ton of great producers. So thank you for helping to organize this, Jen.
Thanks for having me, too.
Awesome. All right. Welcome to New York. Tell us a little bit about the area in which you come from. I feel like in the past year or two, there's been more interest in wines from Liguria here in New York. They've always been available, but there's been more and more interest recently.
Absolutely, yes. Because you have to know that every year, 3 million of American people comes to visit Cinque Terre. And this is amazing. We have a very slope side with a 1,000 years old terraces that was built from the monks. And so we live there trying to maintain the territory, maintain the sustainability of the territory. And so it's a place that was really important 2,000 years ago when the Roman Empire catch the Liguria Puani, a very important tribe that conserved the territory. And then after this, try to begin the viticulture in Colli di Luni area, mm-hmm. in Cinque Terre. And so Plinio il Vecchio, Plinio the Old, started in 79 before Christ to wrote about this territory as magic wines. And so I'm really happy to be here today about speaking this very important project. So after this,
and you see these vineyards, and they're extraordinary. It's some of the most steep vineyard sites that I've ever seen. And because of the geography, from my understanding, almost all the vineyard sites are just extremely close to the water.
Yeah. In fact, the exciting is to work in a place that was built 1,000 years ago.
Yes.
This is really amazing. The problem is that with the last water bomb, with the fire, with the very important age of the classic people that was born in Cinque Terre area, for example, now they have 80, 85 years old. and young people really don't think to work in a place in which you have 20 minutes only for a ride by feet.
Oh, wow. So once you get to the, you know, to the area, you need to walk up into the vineyards for 20 minutes.
Just yes. To... Maybe for have three terraces, and then you have to change the place and rewalk for another place. So, for example, I have 1 hectare, and to make the spraying, I usually have all the day.
All the day, wow.
So you have to think that, for example, in Australia, in all the new world, a people is able to grow 40 hectares. In my area, for example, in Alto Adige, in Tuscany, in Piemonte, one man grow 3 hectares. In Cinque Terre, one man isn't able to grow 6 or 7 hectares.
So that you're saying the average land holding is 6 hectares.
Yes, and so is 1,200 hour for hectare of work.
Wow. What's the largest landowner in Liguria?
So I personally work in Rio Maggiore and a little bit Manarola. And,
so in the Cinque Terre area,
yes,
you really are.
Yes. And then the nearest area is on the borderline between Liguria and Tuscany, in which I have the other estate.
Which is Colli di Luni down
yes,
there.
Yes, Colli di Luni is an interregional in the meaning of, is one of the two reality in Italy in which you have all the territory of Liguria in the area of La Spezia, in which there is only one comune in Tuscany's coast, and this is Fosinova, in which I live, because we are the highest place, because we finish at 440 meters, and we finish on the top of the hill.
Yes. But I guess my point was that all of the landowners have only a small amount. There's no, like, industriale wine, right?
No.
There's nothing in Liguria that is...
Absolutely. I'm one of the biggest producer, and I have 22 hectares.
Yeah, 22 hectares, yes.
Yes. And but it's really, the reality for each ancient people is usually 2,000 meters.
Right. And is it possible at all to use machines in the vineyard? It sounds like everything...
In Cinque Terre, no.
Not possible.
Impossible.
Incredible.
Yeah.
And how much of the winemaking in the area is made for the local 3 million tourists? And I'm sure that that's just American, so I'm sure you get tourists from all over Europe as well.
Yes.
It's so easy to visit. And how I imagine on some level, it's so easy to sell wine to them, right?
Absolutely.
They're coming there, they're sitting on a balcony, on a porch, eating frutti di mare and pesto and focaccia and drinking up all of your wine, right?
Yes.
In order to sell wine to export market, how much... There has to be a different mindset if you want to make high-quality wine for that.
Usually, little producer decide to sell all the product directly in that place. Then there is someone, we are probably in Liguria, 10 states, that decide to sell in all the world... for having an idea of brand, and so to follow the brand and to have with us every day our territory and involve also the economy of our authority. Because if a lot of people come to visit us, there is the possibility to remake some new vineyards, to increase also the restaurant and people that... drink the wine and was able to save the territory. Mm-hmm. Because we have to remember that one time Cinque Terre have 1,500 hectares and now in 32 producer we grow 48 hectares. Nothing.
Is that true? Wow.
Yeah.
What happened?
People prefer go to gym... Yeah. For have gym and not to make gym between the terraces, just in the middle of the nature, because it really is really strong.
I've done there's a walk between the five towns and just walking on this path that's made for walking is long.
Only moving, for example, and up and down in the upstairs in Rio Maggiore, you arrive in the evening. that you're really...
You're really tired.
Yeah.
I can't imagine having grapes on your back or working with tools. And
the big, important, hard life there. Thing that was made in Cinque Terre probably is the monorail. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, in Alsace and Swiss. And so now you can see that between the monorail, there is a little bit of plots again grow. In the other part, there is the wood full of Selvetic peaks that crash the walls and all the mountain go down.
So you're saying that there's about 1,400 hectares that could be very high quality vines if someone were only to plant it in the Cinque Terre.
Now we have 48 hectares in which the medium age is about 80 years old.
80 years old.
Yes, okay. Because like in Colli di Candia, another DOC near Colli di Luni, all the vineyards were planted before, between, we can say, the Fillossera and the First War. And so in a place in which it's really difficult to arrive also by feet, there isn't the possibility to replant the vineyard and to work the soil only by hand and by foot.
Now, I'd love to hear an opinion from you on this, because this is something that has been debated a lot with friends of mine who probably don't know the right answer anyway. The two most important white wines of Cinque Terre are Vermentino and Pigato. And I've heard that there is that they're the same grape, or that they're related, or that they're completely different. Do you have an opinion on... I know, because you grow both Vermentino and Pigato.
So, no, we can divide the Liguria in two most important places. One is the east side, in which people grow Vermentino and Pigato. Mm-hmm. And the other one is the west coast that is divided between Genova, Portofino area, Cinque Terre, and Colli di Luni. And so you have Vermentino and Pigato with the same DNA in the east side. Then there is a Bianchetta Genovese in Genoa area. When you arrive in Cinque Terre, you have Vermentino Bosco Albarola. In Luni area is mainly Vermentino, because the Vermentino arrived in the ancient gate of Luni 2,000 years ago from the Greece as Malvasia for the Roman Empire. And so, for example, Colli di Luni, in my case, is mainly Vermentino with a little bit of Albarola for the freshness.
And you think that this Vermentino is the same DNA as Pigato?
Absolutely.
Absolutely the same.
Yes. Pigato, Vermentino, Furment. Mm-hmm. In Hungary.
Furment also.
Yes, the same. And then there is the Roll and Provence.
And why are there different names in Liguria for that? I could understand in Provence or in Hungary that there'd be a different name, but why in Liguria?
Because probably is a... So usually in Italy we say that the real Italy is 1,000 little Italy, in the meaning that every place has its own kitchen, learning, different method of speaking, a sort of dialect. And so, for example, Vermentino and Pigato has the same DNA, but in the language of the East Liguria, they name Pigato in the meaning of little brown pieces for the big sun in the summer and the ripeness on the skin. And so Pigato...
Oh, like pigment.
Yes,
interesting.
Exactly.
Interesting. But then you have so many producers who grow both Vermentino and Pigato.
In that place, yes. Because then we can study that after three times that you grow and multiply a vine, there could be a little modification in the DNA.
So it's choosing. It's so like if you have if you have a golden retriever and you're always doing the red one as opposed to the lighter one, then it'll always be like the red one.
Like, but still like the history of Pinot Noir, Pinot Gris, and Pinot Blanc. Mm-hmm. And so this little modification in hundreds and thousand years can arrive to modify a little bit the what appear.
Yes. You're the first one. If I finally understand this, after many years. Do you grow any Bianchetta Genovese?
No.
No. They've only
It's very similar to Albarola.
Okay, but you grow Albarola in the Cinque Terre wine.
Yes, it's an interesting variety also for the freshness, because the global warming is increasing the problem for grow because of the low acidity. Mm-hmm. Because Vermentino has this problem to have a big body, big nose, but low acidity. And the Sardinia is a classic example. I want to produce more intensive and fresh and drinkable Vermentini. And so the idea is to replant indigenous grapes near my indigenous variety. That could increase a little bit the freshness and the acidity.
And I respect your idea to plant the indigenous or native grapes. Yeah. I think that this is definitely what makes the wines more unique and specific to the area. How did you figure out which grapes to plant? Is that, I mean, obviously that's been in Cinque Terre for a while.
So, for example, the blend that I use in Cinque Terre is mainly Bosco for mm-hmm. the Chaketra, for the dried version, because Bosco is wonderful because of it has a tannin in the skin, mm-hmm. like Ribolla, like Greco, Petit Arvene. And so I can have a dried desert version of wine without wood, because I usually use the skin contact until 1 month, mm-hmm. respect the wood. And so the classic desert wine with, I don't know, barrels and 120 respect 220 residual in sugar. Mm-hmm. And so it's very difficult to make a desert wine because usually you have to, it's difficult to dry the skins just in front of the sea, because
there's so much moisture,
yes,
and so wet.
You have to joke with the salt.
Mold, yeah.
You have to joke with a different nose.
I'm so curious about this Chaketra, because it's there is not much available here in New York, and anytime that it's so rare, and anytime you see it, it's so expensive.
Yeah.
And I think I've maybe had Chaketra once or twice in my life. And to really understand it, can you tell us more about the tradition of Chaketra? Why do you make it? It seems like it's something hard to sell and hard to produce.
So, for example, to say some numbers, we say that one people isn't able to grow 1 hectare. In this hectare, you could have maximum 40, 50 quintali of grape. During the drying, you will have the 12, 15% of juice. And so at the end, a real bottle of Chaketra has to cost minimum $100.
Wow. Because it's almost like 8 bottles of wine that are squeezed down into one. So you take out 80% of the water.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So, and that's all.
And usually I dry just in front of the sea, close with something for the big pigs. And it's wonderful, because really you could taste the libeccio wind, the sea, all that is on the rock also.
How do Ligurians drink Chaketra? I mean, Do you just sip it by itself? I don't think there's a big cheese culture where you are, right? Or with biscuit? Is it a special occasion wine?
So in my case, is also interesting with cheese, mm-hmm. because the ancient Chaketra were the wines that the fishermen produced for themselves, mm-hmm. and so usually, like in Beignets area, have 18 degree of alcohol and 30-40 residual of sugar. Crazy. Really a bomb. Then seems for the respect for the pregnant women, people decide to have a milder Chaketra, passing at 12 of alcohol until 250 of residual.
Wow.
But I decided that with 220 residual could be the same in the word respect Passito di Pantelleria, Malvasia di Lipari, Vino Santo with Nozziola grape in Trentino.
And I'm sure that tannin makes it feel drier, like there's lower sugar.
Exactly. And so my idea is to have a perfect triangulation between the alcohol, in my case is 15,
yeah.
Then the acidity, because during the drying, the grape could arrive at 10 of acidity. And then the third is the tannin. And so a very, very drinkable Shakatra, and unusual.
My curiosity for Shakatra has actually put us over just a little bit. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with more from Terenzuola Vineyard in Liguria just after this. Hey, what's up? This is Jack Inslee, the executive producer of Heritage Radio Network, also the host of Full Service Radio, and I want to talk to you about brandy. I was lucky enough to visit Louisville, and we all know Kentucky is whiskey territory. However, the best thing I had to drink was brandy. I got to visit Copper and King's Distillery, and they make pure copper pot distilled American brandy aged in Kentucky bourbon barrels, matured with rock and roll. That's right. Sonic aging. They're playing music to the barrels. The stuff is double distilled, non-chill filtered, unadulterated by bois, sugar, or caramel color. And this stuff is feisty, rambunctious, with a long, smooth finish. The stuff isn't made exactly in the style of an international brandy or a cognac. It's more along the lines of an American whiskey. I can really be honest here and tell you, I'm not just reading you an ad, I'm giving you a tip. American brandy, you're not seeing it everywhere. Copper and Kings is doing it incredibly well, and they're cool people. The distillery is full of incredible art. Like I said, they're playing rock and roll to the barrels. So again, Copper and Kings, pure copper, pot distilled American brandy, aged in Kentucky bourbon barrels. That's copperandkings.com. Drink it neat, put it in a cocktail, sub it for your brown spirits, experiment, have fun, get funky. This stuff is awesome. All right, that stuff is awesome. Welcome back. We are on In the Drink here with Terenzuola Wines. We have Ivan in the studio, Gianlucia from Skernik Wines. Yesterday was a big Skernik tasting, and feedback that I just heard actually was that people were excited about the Vermentino Nero from Terenzuola. And what is Vermentino Nero? That is, I'm an enthusiast of indigenous Italian grapes. That's not one I'm very familiar with at all.
Yeah, we have to say that it's 22 years that I try to, between breath, I found myself. In the meaning of a really important research in the vineyard, mm-hmm. in the cellar, and in a sort of creation of very special products. So, for example, in the vineyard, we work as one time, so meaning before the tractors, with 9,000 vine for hectares. So means 1.70 meters on 70. For example, the great areas of Alsace,
Burgundy,
yes, Burgundy, some in Swiss. And the idea is to work for each plant with 1 kilo of bunch. And so the classic idea of the Chateau, that is real, one vine, 1 kilo, one bottle. I appreciate it in biosystem without certification because I'm looking the future, and the future in my idea is without residual, in the meaning of low copper, the using of natural herbs in the cellar and in the vineyards, and all for have a very, very important grape that at the arriving in the cellar are able to ferment themselves, to save themselves. And so, without yeast, without enzyme, without bacteria, all the fermentation are indigenous. Mm-hmm. And so we are building all the new cellar with very cool concrete vats in which the fermentation is able to start without problem. And this because you have to keep and to fix all what we have in the soil under a cork. And so I built in this year a 4-floor gravity winery. And so every rec off is without pumps, but only passing between a floor and the other one. And so in this research, I decided to produce two reds. One is basically Vermentino, and the other one is basically Canaiolo Nero. Canaiolo Nero was the one of the more well-known Occhio di Pernice and Nobile di Montepulciano area, but were planted from Roman Empire between Liguria until the Rome area. And the other one is the Vermentino Nero. Vermentino Nero seems to be a sun between the black Vermentino, because it's really similar to the white one. Mm-hmm. And so studying the DNA, black Vermentino is, with San Michele Aladige, an idea between Gamay, Pinot Noir, and white Vermentino that mixed themselves 10,000, 5,000 years ago.
I would love this. I love Vermentino. It sounds amazing.
It's strange and difficult to explain because at the beginning, 10 years ago, for many people, Vermentino Nero seems a joke. And my grandfather, as so many ancient people, decided to cut off in 30, 40 years because a very important berry with a thin skin. It's so difficult of ripeness and difficult also to have a great nose, because with the thin skin, it produces a lot of yeast, a lot of problem during the aging. And so the lees that remain in the vats with the ancient typology of work in the cellar were the problem for decide to cut him. Now I decided to replant with my bud from 105 years old vineyards in clay soil, total grass. And so this is interesting because it is able to produce a little berry with a most important skin. Mm-hmm. The skin in the Gravity Flow Winery finishes directly without pumps in open top barrels like a Pinot Noir, and then we ferment in indigenous typology and finish in concrete.
This was a vineyard that was already planted to...
I replanted, yes, with my buds.
With your buds?
Yes.
Where did you find the buds? There was a nursery that had this old...
So we have a
vineyard... Because it wasn't widely planted in Liguria.
No, there is a... In the Candia area, between Massa and Carrara, near the white marble, the famous white marble of Carrara, we have a lot of 100 years old vineyards that were planted with that indigenous buds just after the philosopher. And so in that place, we pick the more interesting buds for remake our nursery, and we produce and replant only vineyards with our own material.
You said so many interesting things, and I'm so excited about your use of indigenous yeasts, and concrete is, I think, a very interesting topic to make wines that are very pure and fruity and not adulterated by oak. And this conversion to organics, but the one topic that I would like to ask you more about that you mentioned was the use of low copper. Because this is something that I'm still trying to wrap my head around, and I speak with many winemakers who feel strongly about copper, because copper you're allowed to use it for organic and biodynamic viticulture, but also it's a heavy metal that can stay in the vineyard for many, many, many years. And so how do you approach using copper? You say you want to do low copper.
So I think this is a question that I really hope you don't ask me, because for my idea, we are really in the middle of a big crisis of identity, because now we usually speak about biodynamics, natural, integrated, free wine with a very important estate in Italy. But the problem is that the copper is a toxic product. So we have to understand, like for the fuel, respect the hydrogen for move the car in the future, that the problem will be how many copper will remain in the soil.
Right.
So, for example, in the biosystem, you could use 5 kilos of copper. But in the rainy vintages like 14, a lot of people for sure use 7-8 kilos. So we have to study a sort of auto defense of the vines. And so, for example, we are studying the propolis from the bees, and it is really a Copernican revolution, because the problem is that the vine has to be concept not as an object in which you have to go to spray, but a subject to save. And so the vines has to be a sort of auto-defense method, like a homeopathy for the man.
Yeah. It seems like this is the next hurdle, the next big question, how to minimize the use of the heavy metals and still make great wines, especially in challenging rainy vintages. Anyway, I love your wines, and I love that your approach and how you're constantly trying to improve them. I can't wait to taste the wines out of this Gravity Flow cellar, because they're already elegant, delicate, and beautiful wines, but I can only imagine that that will increase the case. So I want to thank you so much.
Thanks to you, Joe.
Yvonne, for coming. Thank you so much, Jen Lucia.
Thanks for having me.
I really appreciate it. I also want to give a shout out to Yvonne's friend, Ricardo Gabriele, who is traveling with him. He's in the studio with us today. He has a website called Corriere del Vino, which is a website all about Italian wine. And I would recommend you check it out at corrieredelvino.it, only in Italian, though, correct?
Yeah. Thank you, Joe.
It's all only in Italian, so maybe you get the Google Translator on if you don't read Italian. I want to thank all of you for listening. This has been, and also Dan, our new engineer. Thank you so much for you're awesome. It's great to work with you. And thanks to all of you for listening. This has been In the Drink on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.